Good afternoon and welcome to Central Coast Voices. I'm your host, Fred Monroe. Glad you're with us today. The goal of Central Coast Voices is to bring you credible, valid information and insights from diverse members of our community. Central Coast Voices addresses how today's choices will affect tomorrow's community and how we look at the long-term ramifications of change or lack of change in some cases in our society. This is a project of Action for Healthy Communities, the sponsor of the program. Action for Healthy Communities does a report every 3 years on understanding San Luis Obispo County, referred to as Vital Signs. The last report was done in December of 2013. The latest report will start being done in about, the next 2 or 3 weeks. So if you happen to get a phone call from a survey about the status of things in San Luis County, that's assuming you live in San Luis Obispo County, please participate in the survey. It will help us get a better understanding of what is happening in the community and what the long-term ramifications of things going on in your life are. So that will be part of that. Most of those surveys will be done by telephone. Some of them will be done in person. But if you want to look at one of the previous studies, the studies are available at the website actionslo.org. It's readily available. It's downloadable or reviewable online. There is no charge. It gives you really a good picture of where things are from healthcare, housing, education, and things like that in San Luis Obispo County. We would like you to be part of that process. Also, I want to remind you that this is a call-in program. You are welcome to be part of this. This is a community radio station, and you are the community. You can give us a call at 805-781-3875. That's 781-3875. Today's topic, I think, is a very important topic for us to cover, and it happens to be a very good topic to cover right now because it is related to things going on at Cal Poly in the month of May, and last time I checked, it was the month of May. Making excellence inclusive is a topic that's been discussed a lot at Cal Poly and in the media nationally. In recent years, California Polytechnic University in San Luis Obispo, as we know, call it Cal Poly, has been making diversity one of its highest priorities. The concept of inclusive excellence was adopted by Cal Poly in 2009. The Inclusive Excellence Program initiative was designed to help colleges and universities within the larger school to fully integrate their diversity and educational qualities across the lines of people who have, in some cases, not felt like they fit into the environment. And that's really what we want to talk about today. My guests today are staff members and students from Cal Poly, and I'll introduce them in just a moment. But I want to remind you that how this is looked at and how it affects our community goes beyond the college campus. And a lot of what we're going to talk about today, which is focused on Cal Poly, is really focused on the larger community, because the education that students get in a university such as Cal Poly reflects really where our society is for years to come. And that's one reason why this is an important topic. With me today are Jean DaCosta, who's the Executive Director of the Office of University Diversity and Inclusivity, Carrie Mansager, who's the program director with the same office, and Tyler Payton, who is a student at Cal Poly and is participating in some of the programs that are going on over the next couple of weeks of the program. Carrie, I'm going to start with you since you're the program director and this is about a program that you guys are doing this month. Can you give me some history as to what brought about this project on Cal Poly's campus?
Sure. Well, as you mentioned, Cal Poly took on diversity and inclusivity as a major goal, I would say a major imperative, in 2009. Last year, as part of that overall goal, there is an Inclusive Excellence Council on campus, which is appointed by the university president. And the council decided that they wanted to come up with a week of events that really highlight inclusive excellence. So last year in 2015, there was a week of events that brought campus and community partners together to really celebrate and educate around diversity and inclusivity on campus. to not only educate the campus and the community, but to bring awareness to and to make folks who don't always feel safe and included on campus, to help them feel like part of a bigger community. This month, or this year, we decided to try for a whole month instead of just a week, and that was really happily easy to do. The list of programs that we have occurring during the month of May came together through over 30 campus and community organizations that every day, multiple times a day this month, are programs that really promote and celebrate and enhance diversity and inclusivity, not just at Cal Poly, but in the broader community.
Is historically, Cal Poly has been seen as an ag school. It's a school that has, if you walk through campus 20 years ago, you would see a predominantly male Anglo population, because that was the population that focused in this state on agriculture, on engineering, and things like that. If at the same time I was to walk across Berkeley or UCLA or Cal State LA and look at the population, I would see a far more diverse population. That's changing at Cal Poly, but I guess it's a reality that still needs to be spoken about. Tyler, I'll jump in here. You are what we would classify as a minority student. Mm-hmm. It's a reality you walk around with every day. When you looked at Cal Poly as a place to come to, did that become a factor and something to think about in your making a choice to come here?
Well, first, as you guys know, I have to give a shout out to my coworker, Abby Van Sinden. Thank you for covering my shift so I could be here. You're the best. Okay. But so
thanks for being with us. I really appreciate you being able to work that out.
So. Thank you for having me. Okay. As far as the diversity at Cal Poly or the lack thereof, I knew that that was existed before I came here, but I didn't. The other school, that was my other option from Cal Poly, it was really expensive, so I was like, okay, I just got to go to Cal Poly, I guess, because it's cheaper. And I saw that there was less than 1% black students, and I'm black, so obviously that affects me, but I didn't think it was going to be anything. I didn't think it was going to be that big of a deal until I got here, and it really is a big deal.
Does it manifest it, in a way for you other than just noticing that you're a marked minority in campus? If it's 1%, that means for every 100 people you walk by, statistically, you're looking at people who don't look like you. When you first got to campus, how did that affect your feelings about being here?
It was a huge culture shock because I'm from the Bay Area, and so all types of people live in the Bay, you know. And I got here, and it was just really different. I felt like I was so out of my element. And it's not just that there are no black people. It's like nobody listens to the same music as me. Most of the people here are white, upper middle class, conservative. That's not me at all. And it's so weird not being around people who are like me. It just really affects you more than just not seeing other people like you. It makes you uncomfortable. It makes you feel like everyone wants to feel welcome when they go to their school. You know, everybody wants to feel comfortable. It can affect your life and your studies, your personal relationships, your mental health. It's more than just, oh, this hurts my feelings. You know, this makes me uncomfortable. It really goes deeper than that. And I'm glad I feel more comfortable now. I've found the other black people around campus. It's been a search, but I found them. But, yeah, it's really hard.
Yeah. Jean,
yeah.
This is something that your program and your – I don't know what to call it, an agency. I guess it's an office. Okay, office on campus is looking at every day, obviously. How long has that program been around on campus, and how did it come about?
The Office for University Diversity and Inclusivity, we call it OUDI to help us get through all of that language. But it's been around it's in its fourth year now. And it was initially started by my predecessor who came to campus. The president intentionally hired someone to start this office to look at ways that we could both address enrollment, retention, and campus climate. So we have three key areas that we're really trying to look at and address in a multi, lens way, you might say. the diversity and inclusivity efforts across the campus prior to that, although I think they were very important, they were disconnected. So you might have something going on in one part of campus. Let's say it's over in student affairs, but you might not have a whole lot going over in the ag school or in the engineering school or over in whatever other area that might be. And so we wanted to think about a way to make a more comprehensive and intentional effort to address some of the concerns. As you know, and as you indicated, Cal Poly has been an historically white campus, has been historically a male population campus. I've been on campus for about 20 years and held multiple positions on campus. I actually was hoping to retire soon, so they are recruiting for the position, so when they have that filled, I will go out. But I've watched a lot of change over 20 years as well, and I am very, very pleased at the amount of effort going into this issue at this time. I would say, I think for the first time, the campus is really coming together in a more unified effort than I've ever seen before.
I'll throw this out for all three of you, I guess, because one of you may have a better sense of how this is a factor or not. Has there been a historical perspective, and has it come up in discussion about basically the majority population, predominantly Anglo and predominantly male, even though the gender population is far more mixed than it used to be, mm-hmm. Of basically white students saying, hey, I don't know why you're spending any time on this. There's not a problem here. Everybody gets along just fine. I like my friends. My friends like me. And what's the problem?
I think that I'll let Carrie jump in on that, and really for Tyler for sure, because she hears it from students and experiences it in the classroom and in the different areas that she's crosses around campus. I think we have those groups that say that. I think the purpose of Inclusive Excellence Month, and I think the purpose of the Audi office and the attention of what we're trying to do right now is to really address experiences that different students have on campus. As a white student, I may not experience it as difficult in the way that Tyler does, but doesn't mean it doesn't exist for Tyler. It just means that I don't experience it that way. And so when a student says, well, we all get along and we're all doing fine, I may be saying that from my perspective, but that's not the perspective of the students who are underrepresented minorities on our campus. And we need to hear them and we need to address their concerns. But in all honesty, we periodically have incidences across campus that raise these issues and bring to the forefront some biased thinking on some of the members of the Cal Poly campus student body, which raises the point that, we're not all, you know, roses and the happiest place in the world, as someone else alluded to once. Tyler, your experience?
Yeah, I've definitely heard that often. I've always, since I first came here, tried to be a voice for diversity and inclusivity around campus, and I always hear people telling me, like, oh, we don't need a change, and, you know, I'm happy with how things are. They want to keep the status quo, and it's just really unfortunate. I understand that sometimes it's hard to step out of your perspective, you know, and see how someone else is living, but I think that, you know, people just need to work on that, and that's why this month and these events and things like that are important, because it does raise awareness, it does raise our voice as minorities on campus, and not just racially, but different religions, different, like the LGBT community on campus, all different people outside of just the race issue need to feel like they're welcome and whatnot here. So I think people need to get over their bias and, you know, get with the winning team. We're trying to push for something that's positive, and it's disappointing to hear messages like that, but it only makes me want to work harder to bring diversity to this school.
Thank you. That's terrific to hear.
And not only get over their bias, but get over the apathy. I think a big message, I'm thinking about Tim Wise as our keynote speaker coming next week, and I was just reading one of his books, White Like Me, last night, and there was this great passage about how much racism hurts white people. And I think that's something really important to start thinking about is we need to address diversity and racism because it's a sickness within society and within community, just like sexism hurts men, homophobia hurts straight people. So I think that's a big hurdle. We're trying to think about how to get people to think beyond this being other people's issue, but this is all of our issues, because these isms, that racism, sexism, heterosexism, hurt all of us.
there's a lot to look at, and I think that we live in a society that's very diverse. I think for a lot of people that come to Cal Poly, they may be coming from areas that make that are a lot more rural than San Luis Obispo. So for some of those folks, maybe they see it's the word that comes to mind for me is they might see things sort of tribal. All of my friends from Sacramento are cool people, and the people who come to Cal Poly are all like my friends from Sacramento, and I just pick Sacramento as a hypothetical. And we sometimes forget that you literally throw people together in a university of over 20,000 students, and all of a sudden you've got a population, and you didn't get to Cal Poly because of how close you live to campus, or whether or not you happen to only be really focused on a major that they're trying to pull students in on. You got to Cal Poly because it's a hard school to get into. So people who get there from an educational background are surprisingly competent as students for the general populace of students. But I wonder how many people were raised in an environment and a smaller community where they haven't seen the diversity that they're automatically thrown into in an environment like this.
One thing that comes to mind is I've heard stories of a lot of people where they're like, oh, you're the first black person I've ever met here at Cal Poly. And that's just crazy because there are only 160 of us out of 21,000 students. So that's, I don't know, it's just people do come from really different backgrounds, you know, and I understand how that can be hard for them, but sorry, I was thinking of a whole bunch of different instances, but yeah, I've just heard that a lot, or like this is the first time that people have been exposed to different kind of people, and it's just crazy to me. And I think that's why we need to work harder to make this place more welcoming for everybody, because it is some people's first experience with different kinds of people.
Yeah. I also think it's important that we have to go to the mission of Cal Poly. Mission of Cal Poly is an educational institution. Our job is to educate students to be global citizens. And you can't educate students to be global citizens if they're siloed and separate from other people who are different from themselves. And so the more that we can bring the experience of how others are in the world and how to work with people who see the world and have had experiences different from our own, the more we are preparing our students to be able to work in a world that's very complex with very complex issues. As we were talking about earlier with the upcoming elections, and we won't go into that topic, but we don't want to touch that one right now.
Let's leave it alone. It's going to be a long 6 months. Okay.
Right. But it raises the point that you have to work with people with very different viewpoints from your own. And we do have to find a way to build bridges so that we can improve the world we live in for all peoples. And I think part of Cal Poly's job is to do that. And I don't think we should lose sight of that purpose.
Yeah. Let me remind folks that this is a program that we would like you to be able to be part of, too. The call-in number is 781-3875. That's 805-781-3875. We would welcome you into the discussion. That may not be a question. It may be a perspective you have on this. It may be your experience at Cal Poly or in other environments. So we'd like you to be part of the discussion if you so choose. And we would really appreciate you being part of that. This is Community Public Radio, and you are the community that we are, and we would like you to be part of the discussion. So some of the things that are coming up for the month of May, we've talked about on next Wednesday you have a major keynote address.
Mm-hmm.
Why don't we start from there and we'll work out, because that's about the middle of the month anyway. So
yeah, so Tim Wise is coming to campus next Wednesday, May 11th, 7 p.m. in our Performing Arts Center. Tim is an anti-racist speaker. He's been doing this work for decades, has talked in all 50 states, campuses across the nation. I have a little blurb about what he's talking about. Is that okay?
Go right ahead.
Okay.
Yeah.
His speech is called Colorblind: The Rise of Post-Racial Politics and the Retreat from Racial Equity. Ever since the civil rights movement, Americans, liberal and conservative, have advocated a retreat from color-conscious public policies such as affirmative action and even from open discussion of racism as a key factor in the perpetuation of racial inequity in the United States. They have argued that the barriers faced by Black and Brown Americans are largely divorced from racism and that these stem either from race-neutral economic factors such as deindustrialization and inadequate funding for education, jobs programs, and other programs of social uplift, or cultural factors like single-parent families, welfare dependence, and culture of poverty. From this starting point, they contend that universal programs intended to help the poor and working class are the best means for narrowing the racial inequalities, or that self-help and personal responsibility will suffice. In discussing the pitfalls of colorblindness in the Obama era, Wise argues against colorblindness and for deeper color consciousness in both public and private practice. He also debunks the notion that racial inequalities can be blamed on cultural attributes specific to people of color, or that those inequalities can be solved with race-neutral economic policies. Wise explains that we can only begin to move towards authentic social and economic equity through what he calls illuminated individualism, acknowledging the way racial identity continues to shape our experiences and perceptions consciously and unconsciously today. The event is open to the public, so we hope that
it's free.
Yeah, free. Hope people come
and it's in the Harmon Center at the Performing Arts Center, which means it's a large venue. Sometimes we've talked to people and they say, "Oh, gee, things that happen at Cal Poly happen in small spaces sometimes, and it's hard to get into." So that's good to know. We have a number of callers. Let me go. Let's see. Okay, is it Jenna?
Gina?
Is it Gina or Jenna?
Hello? Oh.
It's you.
Okay. You were in the middle of a sentence. Me. My name's Gina Whitaker. Okay, I'm a member of People of Faith for Justice, as well as the Unitarian Universalist Fellowship in San Luis Obispo. And I wanted to share that we have been doing, both organizations have been doing as much as we possibly can to examine white supremacy and white privilege. Our church has hung 3 Black Lives Matter banners. We're on our 3rd. The first 2 were vandalized. And we had a dedication last Sunday of that 3rd banner. And I just want your guests to know that we're here for whoever needs us in terms of support. We support that movement. And I've tried to reach out a little bit to the Black Student Union, but I have not received response. So I just wanted to say that we are here. Now, as far as People of Faith for Justice is concerned, we're doing a series of open doors for understanding with the mosque, the synagogue, and some of the Christian faiths, and those are happening every other month. So the last one was at the mosque, and we had over 100 people, and the next one's going to be at Congregation Beth David. So there are things happening in the community that are trying to bring people together, and I hope that you continue at Cal Poly to do an excellent job. I'm really looking forward to Tim Wise.
Thanks, Gina. Good to talk to you again. They'll be tabling at the Tim Wise event also.
Yes. Great. Thank you, Gina.
Yeah, we will be tabling there. So we'll see you on that day.
Okay. Thank
you very much.
Thanks for the call.
Bye-bye.
Thanks. See you Wednesday.
Yeah. Okay, let's see. Is it Sharon online? There we go. Are you there, Sharon?
I am.
Okay. You're part of the discussion. Jump on in.
Awesome. I just appreciate the program, and I know we have to be brief, which is kind of difficult. I'm just curious, like, I'm totally on, you know, quote-unquote, your side in terms of, like, protecting minorities and helping them to get any advantages or something. But, I mean, I'm for affirmative action, and a lot of people have dropped off of that in the last 10 years. I feel... And I will stand up for people's rights, and I do often. But I'm just curious, like, it seems like it's against the goal. I don't understand the identifying of concerns or things that are wrong by saying, I don't see people of my color, I don't, they don't have my concerns. Because from the way I'm looking at it, it's like we're all kind of living mostly the same thing. It's just a matter of, like, where you started out, how much money your parents had, so that's your jump-off spot to get started in your life. And so there might be some issues there, But, I mean, in terms of other cultural things, most pop music and a lot of, we have a lot of, for just this case with Tyler, African-Americans in a lot of popular culture. I don't see, like, can't we, my brother long ago, I mean, he's 45 now, he had a black friend growing up, and we were in a white community, and nobody really cared because the couple of black kids, they just got along with everybody, and not in an obsequious way. They just were themselves, and everybody just accepted them. And there was, I'm sure they had some issues of some sort, because you look around and there's nobody with your skin color. But other than that, aren't we all just struggling against the same thing, like making enough money, you want to go play and have fun somewhere? Like, what are the different issues? Because it seems like it would be more helpful to just keep pushing the agenda of we're all the same and we all can get along and we all have struggles. It doesn't matter what package you come in. And just be nice to each other and try to support. And, you know, you'll find people that have maybe, I mean, just because you're white doesn't mean that you get along with everybody who's white.
Sharon, let me go ahead and try and get my guests to jump in on this, okay? Thanks for the call.
Yeah, okay. Thank you.
Hi, Sharon. Thank you for sharing your perspective. We are all the same in that we're all people, but we are not all the same in the way that we're treated in this society. I think it's a really idealistic and optimistic view to think that we can just get over the problem by not talking about it and not differentiating ourselves with color, religion, and whatnot, because it would be nice if we didn't have to do that, but we do because the way we are treated differently. Like, for instance, you know, women make less money than men. White women make 79 cents to the man's dollar, while black women make 64 cents to the man's dollar. Hispanic women and Native women make less than that. Last time I checked, I think it's one in every four Native women in America will be sexually assaulted by someone outside of their race. So there are issues that we need to address. It's not just about we're all people, we're all one. It would be great if it was, but there are differences within each community, and especially the way that we're treated politically, economically, socially. There are differences based on our color, culture, religion, sexuality, gender, things like that. So that's why we need to talk about, when I say I don't feel comfortable because there are no black people like me, it's not a diss on white people. Like, I'm fine with white people, I'm fine with everybody, but it would just make me feel more comfortable, and I could have issues that affect my community. I could talk about those with people of my community. I don't think that I can walk up to the white students on campus and talk about black issues, talk about the sexual abuse of black women, talk about how black women make less money, talk about how black people are being killed systematically by the police. I can't have those kind of conversations with people outside of my community just yet, so that's why it's important.
I think what Sharon described is the goal, right? Mm-hmm. For folks to be able to all get along. And I think the goal is color blindness in a way that, like, everyone, we're treated equitably, but we're not there yet. And to get there, we have to do the hard work of talking about these issues and addressing these deep inequities.
I think there's, having been on the Cal Poly campus a long time, I think I can speak to this. There are real differences where we grow up, the communities we grow up in, the families we live in, the churches that we go to in terms of our culture. And one of the problems that I think that we've seen at Cal Poly, and I do believe we're working hard to change that now, is that when we admit 6,000 students and most of them come in dressing very similar, acting very similar, behaving in the same values, the same culture, it becomes very monocultured. Which then says that this is the way to be in the world. When we have students who come from different cultural backgrounds, different parts of the U.S., different family values, different areas that they may have grown up, they bring a richness to that tapestry that we need to have. And we can't expect, and I don't agree with the statement that we are all alike. We are definitely, in my opinion, definitely not all alike. Yeah, we're all human. That part is true. But beyond that, we're really quite, quite different. And we need to honor those differences because there's richness in the African-American community. There's richness in the Chicana Latina community. There's richness in the Asian Pacific Islander community. And if we all want to be like white people, then that's not fair. That's asking people to be different than who they really are. And I think that we're opening that up to really trying to help people understand, let me explore the richness of your way of being in the world as different than my way of being in the world.
I like that. So instead of striving for we're all the same, striving for we honor everyone the same way.
Yeah.
We we live in a society that where interesting things go on, I guess. It's give you an example that I'm trying to sort this out. Sorry. We in religion, probably a lot of Westerners, we've been surprised to hear that there are so many divisive elements within the Islamic faith. We just we're raised in the United States and we're raised in a non-Islamic environment to think, okay, everybody's a member of Islam is just the same. Now, I was raised in Judaism, and I can tell you the conservative Jews, the Orthodox Jews, and the Reformed Jews are not all alike, mm-hmm. okay? So this presumption that all members of Islam are alike is very unusual. But by the same token, if we look at Christianity, we look at a lot of different sects of Christianity, a lot of subgroups that, for lack of a better word, are not always tolerant of each other. So we live in a society that seems like its diversity sometimes gets in the way of paying attention to each other.
Mm-hmm. I also can I add something?
Go ahead.
To expand on Sharon's comments a little bit, I've heard a lot of people say, you know, if you want to stop racism, let's just stop talking about it. And I feel like maybe I can't speak for Sharon, but I feel like maybe that's something that she would say as well. But I just wanted to address that racism, sexism, things like that. Social issues are the only things I've ever heard where someone says, if you want to solve the problem, just stop talking about it. You will never, you know, we're never going to cure cancer if we just stop talking about it. We're never going to stop world hunger if we just stop talking about it. So there's no reason why we should stop talking about the issues facing the LGBTQ community on campus, the Black community on campus, the Islamic community on campus and whatnot.
Yeah. Very good point. Thank you.
I come from doing sexual violence prevention work over the last 10 years. And one of the most powerful ways that we silence people is by not believing them and mm-hmm. by not listening to them. And I think the same goes in regards to diversity. One of the most powerful ways we as a society oppress people is by not believing them and by not listening to them. And part of that is by not talking about these issues and sometimes actively saying, let's stop talking about this because you're perpetuating the problem. But I think the opposite. We need to start believing people and giving people space to talk.
I think one of the goals of Inclusive Excellence Month on campus is to begin to build common language to talk about these issues. I think mm-hmm. it is difficult for people to talk about racism or talk about microaggressions mm-hmm. or talk about how they see the world different from someone else. Sometimes we don't have the words or we're afraid of offending a person or maybe we're sensitive and we're easily offended ourselves because we want people to really hear us and know what we're trying to say. Inclusive Excellence Month offers a variety of programs that individuals can attend and learn from and find language and find common understanding and find common languages to be able to bridge some of these discussions that are tough discussions.
Mm-hmm. Okay. I want to remind folks that this is a discussion we'd like you to be part of if you wish to. We're talking about excellence in an inclusive environment. Or in excellence in inclusivity, and a number of different ways to look at it. And the phone number is 781-3875. That's 781-3875. I have three members of Cal Poly staff and students in the discussion with me today, and I would like you to be part of it if you'd like to be also. Tyler, there's a program going on Friday the 13th. Cal Poly's own Powerful Voices of Storytelling, mm-hmm. and I guess you're participating in that.
Yes, I am.
Okay, you brought something with you to share with us today that you're presenting at the program. Would you like to read it?
Yeah, I would. But before I read it, I would like to talk a little bit about the program.
Go right ahead. That would be fine. Yes.
So Cal Poly's OWN, the OWN is an acronym, and it stands for Original Women's Narratives, and it's going to replace the vagina monologues at Cal Poly because we've done that for 10 years, and it's just outdated, and it's not very inclusive. So we've had women from Cal Poly write in and submit pieces about, body issues, about being LGBTQ, about being sexually assaulted, about family, race, all those things, women's issues. So I submitted a piece about being a Black woman because that's really the most important part of my identity to me. And it's kind of an open letter to Black women. But more importantly, it's me. I have a niece who's 12 and she's Black and she's darker skinned than I am. So I feel like she's going to have even a tougher time in life than I am, which is unfortunate. So I wrote this as something that I would like to tell her and that I hope she knows as she grows up. And it's called Dear Black Women. Dear Black Women, You are not what the media tells you you are. You are not what society tells you you are. You are not ugly, obnoxious, unintelligent. You are not belligerent and unapproachable. You are not unlovable. You are not worthless. You are not a finger-snapping, neck-rolling stereotype. You're not a sex toy for men who want to see what it's like. You're not supposed to be silent and complicit in your plight. You're supposed to stand up and be heard and fight when aggression and oppression are weighing down with all their might, forcing you into a corner that's small, cramped, and tight until you can see no rescue in sight. Black women, let me help you. Let this letter be your rescue. I have been in your place, have suffered in your space. The only escape is to realize what you are. Black women, from your hair to your nose to your lips, from the light to the tan to the dark, from the thin to the thick to the big, you are beautiful, believe me. You carry the wisdom of every black woman before you and the strength of the universe within you. You are powerful, you are significant, you are loved. If by no one else, then by me, because you are all my sisters. Sincerely, a black woman.
Very good. Thank you.
That's yeah. Awesome.
Thanks for being willing to share that.
Yeah, no problem. Thank you for letting me read it.
Can you say when the program is being?
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. It's May 13th. Oh, that's next week. Yeah. It's next Friday. Next Friday, doors open at 6 p.m. It's going to be in Chumash. Doors open at 6, but the show starts at 7, and we will be selling tickets at the door. Tickets are only $5, so it's super cheap, and you should all come see it.
Okay, great. Thank you very much. We'll get back to the topic a little bit more in a minute. I didn't want to end your talking about your piece, but we have a couple of callers. I'd like to give them a chance, and we'll come back and revisit that. Okay, so let's see. We have Kim. Are you there, Kim?
Yes, I am.
Okay, jump on in.
Okay. I just wanted to say I'm enjoying listening to the program, and I do have a little bit of a different perspective from my experience at Cal Poly. I attempted to get into Cal Poly 35 years ago for architecture, and I had all the qualifications. Back then, you had to take an aptitude test. I had straight A's. I had work experience. But when I attempted to apply, I was unable to get in, and I ended up getting into civil engineering, which at the time had 3% women. My roommate, however, had decided, planned to go to Cal Poly since I was 13 years old. And my roommate decided one semester before she came there that she was going to be an architect because she was a good drafter. But she had a Mexican and German citizenship. So I felt very displaced by the fact that I don't even think she ever became an architect. And that was my dream. And because of the affirmative action, I still drive around today and think, what if I become an architect at Cal, from Cal Poly? Instead, I went into engineering, and I have to be honest with you, I didn't seek out women and try to find other people that were like me. I realized that that was predominantly male environment, and I made friends with the males there and got along with them, and to this day, I still work with men, almost all men. But I don't really believe in the affirmative action. I believe in people being qualified and given a fair chance to prove. And to be honest with you, when I graduated, I didn't want to be hired because I was a woman. And I didn't want to be hired because somebody needed a quota to fill. I wanted to be hired because I'd worked really hard and I was qualified. And I'm self-employed. I've been so for 15 years, and I've done really well because I believe in qualifications, not give me a free pass. So I have a little bit different perspective, and I've had many friends of all sorts of ethnicity. I've loved them from Africa to Lithuania to Asia, and I just love them for who they are. Not it has nothing to do with their skin color to me.
Okay. Very good point. Thank you very much for the call.
Okay, thank you.
Kim, congratulations on all your success. I appreciate you sharing your success story. I think it's a little bit insulting to say that someone who gets into Cal Poly or a job or whatever because they're a different race than you, ethnicity, whatever, to say that they are unqualified is really an insult to every minority. There are people who are completely qualified. I'm a black woman, and I was qualified, and that's why I got into Cal Poly. It was not because of any affirmative action. And even if it was, I don't understand the problem with opening the door for people who wouldn't have opportunities otherwise. It's not like we live in a completely fair country where the economy treats black people equally with white people, and black people have the same opportunities as white people and any other ethnicity. We all have different amounts of opportunities, so there shouldn't be a problem with opening the door for opportunities. And you even said yourself that you work in a male-dominated industry and you've made friends with all the males, and that's a great story for you, but not everyone has that same personal experience. And there's a problem even with that, that your industry is male-dominated. It should be more open to all genders. And, yeah, so that's just how I feel about that.
And I wanted to back up a little bit that with Prop 209, affirmative action is not legal in, right, in college campuses. Right. So we're not advocating necessarily for affirmative action. We're just advocating for equity amongst communities. I remember the last job where I worked, I was meeting with someone in HR, and he saw me check off the ethnicity box where I identify as biracial, Chicana, and white. And when I checked off Hispanic, it said on the form, he said, and he was a white man, and he said, "Oh, you're so lucky. You're benefiting from affirmative action. That must be why you got this job." And I mean, my reactions were, one, that's dumb because there is an affirmative action on public campuses, and two, just how hurtful. Like, I got this job because of my qualifications. And I would say folks of color getting into college campuses and getting employed, they achieve that in spite of their identity. Like, we have to overcome racism, sexism, homophobia to get to that qualified level. So just I appreciate the everyone's equal mentality and that everyone works hard and that should be honored. But that, again, by not listening and believing stories of folks who have struggled, the harm that that does.
Yeah. All right, let's go on. We have a call from Jacob. Jacob, are you there?
Yeah.
Thanks for your patience.
Yeah, no problem.
Jump on in.
What is that?
You're on the air.
Hi, Jacob.
Hey, Jacob.
Oh, hi. Okay.
You need to turn your radio down if you still have your radio on.
Okay. So, to get a little less general and more real, something I've seen in person after being a student for 4 years, and also on a lot of communities, online communities that are college-driven, such as Reddit, people take. I'm seeing. I don't agree with this, but. And I'm white, but a lot of white people are saying that white privilege, being called out for that, is an insult. That these same people, these are a lot of things that people at Cal Poly are actually saying. They believe that everyone just wants to be a victim. And you can kind of hear it in the undertones of people who have called so far. That people are too sensitive. And that another really common claim I'm hearing from actual people I know, is that it's racist against white people to be calling them out for this. I think that one of the biggest things we have to do to address the situation on campus and to foster a better community is for you guys to, or for us to, address that people actually think this, and to tell them, to show that it's okay to acknowledge that there's a problem and that for us to solve it. So what do you guys think? Let's start off with Tyler. What do you think that we can be doing to address this and make it, show them that it's okay to address this and it's okay to fix it?
I think that we need to first understand what privilege means, because privilege is not an insult, and every single person has privilege. Like, although I'm black, I'm straight, I'm cisgendered, I'm able-bodied, so those are all privileges that I have. Saying that you have privilege is not an insult to you, or how hard you worked, how hard your family has worked. So I think once we get over that idea of, like, oh, you're insulting me, then we can really understand our privilege and therefore help other people help other people get the same privileges as us. And I think we need to stop being scared of talking about racism, talking about sexism, things like that. We need to incorporate that, not just in our campus. That needs to be like a nationwide conversation. But we need to stop being scared to talk about it. And programs like this, like Inclusive Excellence Month with Cal Poly's own, things like that, are hopefully opening up the door for those conversations to have people feel more comfortable to talk about it, and not only with their friends who are similar to them, but with people who are different than them, And I think that's a really important aspect of it as well.
I think Tyler makes a really good point, and I'll speak from the personal. We grew up very, very poor. I grew up in a family of six children, rather. It felt like a brood, whatever you said. Six children. My parents did not finish high school. I was the one who left home and went to college. But when I first heard the terms white privilege, it threw me, because growing up very, very poor in a very, very poor area, that's actually located in a very rich area of Marin County, I never felt like I had any privilege. So privilege has to be defined by the person. When I understood that white privilege meant that if Tyler and I are standing in line and we got there at the same time, are you going to serve Tyler before you serve me? Or are you going to serve me because I'm white before you serve Tyler? Now, that privilege is you're probably going to turn to me more than likely, more often than not. Not you in the you sense, but a person who does that. And so it's becoming aware of that maybe doors open to me because I'm white that do not necessarily open to Tyler or open to others. And so it's really understanding what does my privilege about and where do I feel privileged and where do I not feel privileged. And I think, as Tyler said, we're all privileged in different ways. I am able-bodied. I am white. That gives me privilege. But I also know what it's like to be very, very poor and to have nothing. So we have different ways of being in the world that we bring to our experiences.
We can't cover all of this. We've only got a few more minutes. But I usually try and maintain as neutral a position as I can, but I want to share a brief experience. I know some people who went to a Midwestern private school, and I can tell you I absolutely know they got into that school based upon the legacy of the family contributing a tremendous amount of money to the school. So we've lived in a society where there's all kinds of affirmative action. Sometimes it's reverse affirmative action, and sometimes it's affected by economics. I think that's a reality we've lived with, and I think that the fact that you're here talking with us today about ways to address this, we've kind of stayed out of the economic range of this until you brought it up, Gene, and I appreciate you mentioning that. We've got a few minutes left. We don't have a whole lot of time, so I want to make sure that we don't leave anything behind that we really want to talk about. So, Carrie, I want to make sure we probably cover as much as we can. How can people get more information specifically about what's going on Cal Poly this month in this program?
Yeah, as I mentioned, there are events and programs happening every day this month on campus, and it's put on by over 30 campus and community organizations. To find out more, because there's too many to name and go over right now, you can go to our website at diversity.calpoly.edu. That's diversity.calpoly.edu. To highlight some of the events, as I mentioned, we have Tim Wise coming to campus next Wednesday. Tyler will be performing in OWN on next Friday. We have events on Thursday the 19th, such as Know Your Status, to raise awareness about HIV and AIDS. So there's a series of speakers coming to campus to do free testing and to talk about some of the isms that are going on around not properly treating and respecting communities around HIV and AIDS. We're celebrating on campus on the 19th. Also, the President Armstrong will be at an event called President's Diversity Awards, where we're giving out awards to students, staff, faculty, campus, and student groups that really have promoted the diversity imperatives at Cal Poly. Another training that I'm excited about that's not just happening this month but throughout the year is there's an undocumented student working group that's doing training on how to be an ally to undocumented students, which are a very vulnerable population on our campus.
It's a lot of good stuff to cover, and I think from my perspective, not being a student on that campus, having never been a student on that campus, I think the fact that so many of these programs are available to the rest of the community to come and hear what's going on campus, I think for those of us in the general community of San Luis County, in the Central Coast generally, we oftentimes don't know what's going on with college students. We might know what's going on in the students in our own family, but we don't know a lot of what's going on in the community we live in and how much diversity there is here. So I really commend you folks for doing this. Want to specifically mention, okay, and remind people, so the Tim Weiss program next Wednesday night is a free program. There's not a ticket charge for that. There's sometimes a perception that a good portion of what goes on in the PAC is a ticketed event. Mm-hmm. Do you need tickets in advance for that, or just show up and you'll fill the pack?
Right. You're going to need to show up and you can fill the pack. There will be a parking charge, as we always charge for parking, and none of us escape.
I have to pay for parking. Yeah.
So we all have to pay for it, faculty, staff, and students, mm-hmm. And visitors. So you will have to pay the standard parking fee that's there. But the program itself is free to the public. I know we'll have a number of people there, so you might want to think about arriving a little early.
Okay. Tyler, mm-hmm. what year are you in?
I'm a second year.
You're a second year. Okay. Any regrets about choosing Cal Poly?
I try not to have regrets because everything that I've been through makes me who I am today. But I think if I maybe had known a little bit more about the campus climate at Cal Poly, I may have chosen a different school. But at the same time, I do feel lucky and grateful that I did go here because it did take me out of my element. And, you know, I'm saying that's important for all the other students on campus. It's important for me as well. I wouldn't have learned so much about myself, my culture, my, you know, just I wouldn't have had the same experience if I had gone to a different school. I've made some friends here that I really love. And there are some things here that I don't appreciate, which is what I'm trying to change. But there are a lot of things that I do that I'm happy about, and I'm glad I came here.
You opened that up, and it won't be the last word, so you've got some other time coming. I'll get back to that. But okay. So we're down to the last few minutes. Carrie, what's your parting shot for us today that you want to make sure we don't forget?
Oh, well, I should remind people to come to Tim Weiss, but I wanted to give another shout out to Tyler what she's been talking about really has sparked conversation nationally. Her piece that she wrote for OWN has actually been picked up by Huffington Post, right?
Yeah.
That you've written two articles for the Huffington Post. So this isn't just a Cal Poly issue or San Luis Obispo County issue. This is a national issue that we, thinking positively, people want to talk about this. And we're really just trying to open doors and trying to talk more about diversity and inclusivity and how we all play a role in making this world and society more equitable.
Did you learn a lot about this from other schools, or are other schools learning from you?
I wish they were learning from us. You know, I think there's a lot of collective conversation about these issues nationally right now. So there's a lot of student activism and conversation. I think we're leaving out, we left out in this whole hour of conversation, the staff and faculty component. That staff and faculty, there's not a lot of racial diversity in those areas, and that's really hard. A lot of staff and faculty are leaving because it doesn't feel safe or comfortable at all times. So this is really a conversation that folks are wanting to have across the nation.
Okay. Tyler, you got about 2 minutes. As I told you, the two-minute thing I want to clarify for listeners, I've shared with all my guests before the program that we'll try and make sure that everybody gets about 2 minutes at the end to say what they want to say. Mm-hmm. I guess I want to know what you want to make sure we don't forget or don't pay attention to after listening to this program.
Sorry, I know I only have 2 minutes, but I have so much to say. I really just want people to understand that this is important, and it's more than just people feeling sad on campus or feeling uncomfortable. It's people feeling safe. I've worried about my own safety on campus. People worry about their safety. It affects people's mental health, their physical health. I know many people who have not been able to keep up with their studies because of how they feel with the campus climate, and it's so important an issue, and I really just want everyone to understand that it is more than just hurt feelings. It's your livelihood, your personal relationships, your mental health, things like that. And so it's important that we all work together to improve the campus climate and to improve the lives of all the students, faculty, and staff.
That was less than a minute. You have more time, I guess. What kind of conversations are you experiencing among the very small? You said about 160 black students. Okay, is there much of a dialogue among your black peers as far as what you can do as a a collective voice on campus.
Yes, definitely. The BSU is awesome. We didn't even have a BSU until last year. Me and some other people started it up again, and we've really been working to increase our presence on campus and working to make our campus more comfortable for the Black students. We've also been joining other clubs on campus to promote, you know, awareness about the LGBT community, things like that, and we're doubling up with other cultural clubs on campus, and we have a lot of great conversations about ways that we can improve within the Black community and ways that we can help the campus improve to make us feel more welcome.
Great, thank you. See, I had to make you use 2 minutes. Okay, Jean, you get the last word, pretty much.
Okay, great. I want to say a couple of things. One thing I want to say is Tyler is a perfect example of the quality of students that we get at Cal Poly.
Thank you.
We have built an excellent reputation across the nation to appeal to students who, particularly in the state of California, and some of our out-of-state students that come to Cal Poly, apply to Cal Poly. We get about 57,000 applications to the 6,000 slots we have each year at Cal Poly. And so the ability to choose students that come from different backgrounds and different experiences becomes somewhat limited when you have to have an admission process that really is looking at GPA scores and SAT scores and those kinds of things. And so we try to get, obviously, the top students to come to Cal Poly, and we're seen as a top school. That being said, we have to do the hard work of helping students like Tyler and others feel comfortable at Cal Poly. And I think we're doing more now on our campus than we ever have before. And I see this as the beginning. I like the quote, Dr. Armstrong, who says, you know, we've done some and we still have a lot more to do. And I totally agree with him. I do want to highlight one more event, if I can take a moment.
Go ahead.
The Baker Forum is also tomorrow, the 2016 Baker Forum. It is a panel discussion we'll be having on campus. It's a president's forum. It's called Diversity in Higher Education, Creating a Diverse Workforce with Bill Swanson, who's retired chair of CEO and Raytheon Company, and also other panelists will be there as well, speaking to that issue of a diverse workforce and the importance of a diverse workforce. So we focus our energy on graduating our students with a variety of skills. One of those skills that we need to do a great job at and a much better job is helping students to know what it means to be inclusive and to work with people who are different than they are.
Thank you. Good way to end that. Very good way to present that. Thank you very much. This has been Central Coast Voices, if you haven't noticed by now, anyway. And I want to let you know that that next week, Chris Kington Barker, who would normally be with you, has the week off, and she'll be returning on May 19th. Next Thursday, I'll be back with you, and we'll be speaking with folks from the San Luis Obispo County Long-Term Care Ombudsman's Agency. It's a mouthful, and how we as a community can work to prevent domestic abuse in later years of our lives. Domestic violence faces victims of all ages, including older adults. It's often viewed as part of a larger elder abuse problem that has many faces and many facets. This can include physical, sexual, emotional, financial exploitation, neglect and abandonment that happens with seniors and the elderly and the frail. In identifying the subtle signs of this kind of a domestic abuse among seniors is very important, and that'll be the program that we will do next week. I appreciate you being able to be part of that with us if you can. Central Coast Voices is a production of Action for Healthy Communities, a project of the Community Foundation of San Luis Obispo County in collaboration with KCBX. This program is made possible through underwriting of Joan Gellert Sargent, and we appreciate her support. Your input for Central Coast Voices can come to us at voices@kcbx.org, and that's, you can also call at 543-2323. I want to thank my guests today, Jean DaCosta, Carrie Mansager, and Tyler Payton, for a wonderful program. I appreciate you being with us. This American Life is up next. This has been Central Coast Voices. Thank you for joining us.